Welcome to the Nintendo Fusion Podcast, a podcast that fuses past, present, and future Nintendo thought. My name is David, and I'm accompanied with my friend Jordan. Now, Jordan, why doesn't Mario like to use the internet?
Because he'd have to use a browser.
Oh, that's exactly right.
Aha, I got one.
Well done. I'm so proud of you. That's the first one you've gotten right in a while.
Yeah.
So now I gotta up my game again. Gotta keep you guessing. But anyway, I think that is a little bit on topic for today. It's been a while since we've recorded. We've had a lot of conflicts with parts of the holiday season and busyness. And I was sick 1 week, and then Jordan was sick, and then we've had some very various issues together to record.
I'd say my throat still is not like in top shape, so hopefully he doesn't mess with this podcast episode.
Yeah, please forgive Jordan's voice. And if there's some coughing, I'm going to do my best to edit it out. But thank you for understanding. We just wanted to record because it's been, I think, like a month and a week or so since the last time we actually recorded. So.
Yeah, and with the holidays coming up, it might be another break pretty soon here again.
Yeah, yep. So here's an episode. So the main topic this week that we kind of want to go over is like something that we talk about every year, right? And it's the Game Awards.
Yeah, we clearly have a love-hate relationship with the Game Awards because every year we say that we're not going to watch it. And then we end up watching it, and then we complain about the fact that we watched it. I think that's a good summary of the Game Awards.
That's pretty much how it goes. I mean, it's Jeff Keighley's personal show mostly trying to be a replacement for E3 disguised as an award show. But it's like not really an award show anymore. Like, you were pointing out to me that a lot of the speeches only got like 30 seconds or something.
Yeah,
right?
I believe the timer was 30 seconds. And they really pushed people off. Like, they would start playing music to try and like get people off. They had a big like timer off screen telling people, hurry up, get off stage or whatever. There was a meme going around on the internet because there was one speech where I believe it was the Baldur's Gate people were talking about the difficulties of developing during COVID and how they lost some members to COVID. And it was like a really sad, touching story. And as soon as they started talking about it, the cue card popped up saying wrap it up. It's not good timing.
Yeah. And like, it feels like this whole event is much more about the reveal trailers, but I don't care for most of the reveal trailers. Like, maybe the reason why they cut down the time for speaking is because they want to make sure that the viewers that are watching the Game Awards are there just for the reveals. And that's what they want to build up the hype for, right?
Yeah. So like we've been saying for quite some time, a big reason why I don't like Keighley's shows are they feel very, very corporate. They are very clearly designed to bring in sponsors, to make money off of sponsors, and to try and get as much clout in the industry. And it focuses a lot more on the AAA side than on like the creative side. And it's just, I don't know. People were also like mentioning, so like there was a video from Arlo today talking about like how like the game industry he thinks is kind of popping. The AAA industry is popping. The bubble is bursting. And one of the things he was talking about was how the Game Awards just did not focus on like the game creators at all. It was all just about like what's new. And like what is new to be shown is kind of just all blending together. Doesn't like seem like that creatively driven. And then also how like the Game Awards just didn't even talk about how the game industry is experiencing mass layoffs right now. And then he also mentioned oh, but back in like 2015, Keighley was like on the side of the people when he was defending Kojima. And it's like, I don't. Kojima's not the little guy.
No, he's not.
I think the reason why Keighley like was on the side of Kojima is because one, Kojima is his like personal friend. And two, even Sony like was like defending Kojima. Like it was the corporate safe decision to be on Kojima's side there. And so,
yeah, I mean, he was a big name even in 2015. And yeah, he was removed from, oh, what was it called? He was working with Konami, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And Konami was, as an entity, was exiting the game industry for the most part. So I think people, the industry just wasn't interested in maintaining a bridge with Konami. Kojima's bridge was just worth a lot more.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's made some very important video games over the years.
All I'm getting is that I don't feel like the Game Awards have ever really cared about the game developers ever at any instance.
I mean, maybe they cared a little bit more towards the beginning of the Game Awards, especially when they actually let them
the refresh of the Game Awards, because like 2015. Before that, it was the Spike Awards, and it was a lot worse than it is now.
That's for sure. Oh, but yeah, I mean, it's just such a disappointment. Like, I had the stream on in the background while I was doing completely other things. I think I was playing like Magic Arena or something. I just wasn't paying attention at all.
Yeah.
And like every time I glanced over to see a new game reveal, it just looked like the same game. I was like, this has the same graphic level. It still looks like it's trying for that realism. It's not trying to expand art. You know, like, I kind of agree that we're at this point where AAA is going to burst its bubble. Like,
yeah. I'm personally in the camp that the industry is business as usual right now.
yeah.
Because, like, there's always just been AAA studios just chasing whatever trends are being set by other studios, right?
And that's largely what Game of the Year has been, right? Is who is going to be the next thing that people are trying to chase.
But, like, I would argue that the game industry is in a healthier place now than it was back in, like, say, 2014.
Like, oh, yeah.
When everyone was trying to be Call of Duty, I'll take what we have now over, like,
I'll take huge world RPGs over every game being Call of Duty.
Yeah. I feel like there's just the AAA industry. There's just always going to be studios that are trying to play it safe. And because they're safe and like not creatively driven, people like you and I are just not going to be as interested. But the average person who plays video games, who's not even tuning into the Game Awards, is, because like there's a reason those are trends, right? Like,
yeah, for sure.
People are playing, like, them, people are buying them,
yeah, even if people aren't actually like playing them all the way through, right? Like, these big huge RPGs, which seem to be kind of the norm, take more than like 50 hours on average to play through.
Yeah.
And it kind of seems like you have to pick every year which RPG or two you're going to play in your free time with all of the other hobbies if you're not just a pure gamer. So, I don't know. I just think it's interesting to follow the trends of the gaming industry. I think it's one of the fun reasons, or one of the things that I enjoy the most about doing a hobby video game podcast with you, Jordan, is like, we talk about it so often and in a more public place that we can even go back and listen and be like, ah, so that's what we thought even a few years ago.
Well,
so
yeah, like, I do want to, like, I would say, like, the kind of games I enjoy are going to be more single player focused on dedicated gaming hardware. And that's kind of where the trends are at the moment, right? So 10 years ago, there was article after article of just like naysayers and doomsayers that this is the next console generation is going to be the last console generation, and everyone's going to transition to mobile gaming and streaming, and no one's going to be able to build their own computers anymore. And here we are. Oh, and also that for single player games are going to go away. Like, EA was like shutting down every single first party game that they had. People cheered when they brought back a Star Wars game that was single player for like the first time in like years. So I would say the game industry is a lot healthier now than it was back in, I would say, like, the early 2010s was like the dark ages, in my personal opinion.
I can agree with that.
There's always going to be sludge in the industry. That's never just going to go away.
Well, you also have to remember, Jordan, that that period of the 2010s is also the era of the Wii U. Yeah. So we just had a negative outlook on everything anyway, because the Wii U was awful.
And Xbox One. So, like, Xbox was also suffering. So it was all just, like, heavily reliant on, like, Sony doing anything. And, like, Sony had a slow start to the PlayStation 4.
Yeah, but then, and then their library is awesome.
Every third party studio just wanted to be Call of Duty. So it was, yeah. it was rough. It was bad.
I mean, I'm looking at my shelf that has some of the PlayStation 4 games that I bought late 2019, I think. And I'm like, yeah, those are all pretty solid. Like the first Spider-Man, The Last of Us, Persona 5, those kinds of games. Like PlayStation 4 had some really great stuff, but it did take a while. So. And PlayStation 4 was kind of off to a rough start too, or PlayStation 5, excuse me. I don't know. I'm not that much of a PlayStation gamer. I mostly got it for Kingdom Hearts and Spider-Man, and I still don't have a PS5. I mean,
there were still good games. Like, don't get me wrong. Like,
oh yeah.
But it was not great.
So,
we're in the age when like the trendsetter was Breath of the Wild and everyone's like trying to copy Breath of the Wild for the most part.
Open world RPG. Yeah. How do we make it bigger? How do we make it longer?
Fortnite. And there's just always going to be a multiplayer trendsetter, right? There's always going to be whoever's at the top and everyone trying to get into that market. That's just really difficult to get into, but whoever wins, like, wins big. Right.
So, right. Well, and Fortnite makes me laugh because now they're adding all of these new modes to really compete with Roblox because they want to get the kids' attention. They've had like a creative studio for a long time, but now they have like Lego Fortnite and they have a racing game in Fortnite, and it's like all within Fortnite itself. So it's fascinating to me how you have these like mega games like Roblox and Fortnite that are just like constantly competing to see who can be the user content creator game for all time or whatever.
Yeah. But. So trying to circle back to the Game Awards, I also just find it kind of interesting that because like this discussion, I've seen it all over the internet. Arlo was like a big part of kind of pushing it, I feel. But it was before Arlo. That's just kind of like when I first started noticing it. And then like a lot of other people were talking about it elsewhere. I also just find it really interesting that we're having this discussion that like the industry is becoming really samey or whatever. In the same year that everyone says was like a huge year for games, right? So really all it is just that 2024 is just looking bad.
I can agree with that because this year has been awesome. So many cool, unique, interesting things from all aspects of gaming. But the Game Awards trailers that we saw this last week were like, this all just looks the same to me. I mean, yeah, there are some that stick
out. One thing I'm kind of concerned about because... we had the pandemic that was like, we cannot pretend that that didn't have a major impact on the game industry, right?
It absolutely did.
I'm kind of worried that the entire industry is just going to be kind of like synced now in their dev cycles. And like 2024 is just completely like absent because everyone kind of released their 2020 games this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you and I are hopeful that 2024 is like the year of Nintendo when they release the Switch 2 and have like their whole backlog that they're finally pushing out.
I don't know how much of a backlog they can possibly have, though. Like, if you look at the state of most of Nintendo's franchises, Zelda, we're not getting Zelda next year. Splatoon.
Oh, definitely not.
Splatoon is done. Maybe Mario Kart. Hopefully Metroid. We could get Mario. Donkey Kong.
Yeah, we could get 3D Mario.
Yeah, 3D Mario. But like,
and Donkey Kong.
We got F-Zero. Fire Emblem last year. We got Pokemon 2 recently.
I mean, Pokemon's DLC Part 2 launched yesterday. And from some of the rumblings I've heard, it seems like Game Freak is maybe doing another one. I don't know. There seem to be a lot of unanswered plot points. Another DLC? Still. Yeah, another DLC. I feel like that's what Pokemon is potentially doing because they want to push back the dev cycle for Gen 10 because they're actually listening to users. That's my hope and dream, but who knows?
I mean, it's a more cynical Pokemon approach company. Would just be that they realize it's more profitable and easier to push out DLC than a spinoff game.
Yeah. You can spend $60 for a 30-hour base game, or you can spend $40 for a $10 game bunch.
Like make like a whole new game such as Let's Go Pikachu or whatever, right?
Oh, for sure, for sure.
And it will make more money.
And it might be compatible with the Switch 2 and actually run well.
Yeah. I don't see Pokemon. If they were to go with their normal dev cycles, it would be 2026, right?
Had 2022 with Scarlet and Violet. It released last holiday.
Yeah, so 2025 would be the normal
release. It's possible that they release the next Legends game if they are actually making another Legends game next year, if that's like one of their launch titles for Switch 2. Because like Legends Arceus was amazing, and I think that they could crank out another one of those.
I mean, I wouldn't call that amazing. I'd say it's good. Well, I'd say it was a fun experiment. I would love to see them do something interesting with it, but I don't have a lot of faith in Game Freak doing something interesting with it.
To qualify my statement, it is amazing compared to Scarlet and Violet and Sword and Shield and Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl. Because it's unique and different.
I mean, if they're going off of the normal schedule, then we're getting a Black and White remake next year, right? And it would just be probably made by the Diamond and Pearl team.
Oh, I'm going to lose it if ILCA makes this one. I'm not buying Pokemon games anymore if it's by ILCA, unless it looks really good.
I don't know. I'd probably still get it. I've given up hope on like Game Freak. They're good enough to play. And like not good enough for me to like care.
Yeah, because I started playing the DLC a little bit last night, but I had completely forgotten that I forgot to finish the first DLC. And you actually need to finish the first one to access the second one. And so I was like, well, I'll finish the first DLC and then I am not going to touch the second DLC tonight. And that's how I handled the DLC. I'm waiting for a patch because apparently the lighting engine is like terrible right now indoors in the new areas, and it's blinding. And the game already indoors? Gives me headaches. Well, they
when
have
I
like
last played the game, you
totally
go inside
areas.
A house.
Well, I mean, like inside the research facility or whatever that is the main location.
The two buildings in the game.
Yeah, exactly. And what really bugs me about the DLC is all of the legendary Pokemon that are available that are returning. Are all shiny locked, all 25 of them.
Oh, fun.
Like, these are returning legendaries. I understood it for Legends Arceus because they made a big deal out of like huge good shiny rates for all of the other Pokemon. But having shiny locked legendaries after we got Dynamax Adventures in Sword and Shield, where you could actually hunt for shinies, just feels like a slap in the face. It means that Kubfu and Glastrier and Spectrier are locked. As shinies, we still can't get their shinies. Anyway, it's like, why did I pay for this?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll play through the DLC eventually. I kind of want to do a retrospective episode on Scarlet and Violet where I listen back to my initial impressions on it and compare it to how I feel now.
You are definitely a lot higher on it than you are now.
Oh yeah, like the game has burnt me out so bad.
I was the cynical one back when it came out. Now I'm the one that's like on the defense of Scarlet.
Hey, it's actually okay, and I'm like, I don't think so. Actually,
it's weird being on the one that's defending.
I know you're usually the cynical one, like in all of our conversations. But
I'm just getting more apathetic. Anyway. As the years go on.
That's probably it. I need to stop caring as much as I do.
I mean, caring and passion are fine.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just getting old and cranky.
Hey, you're honestly like less cranky than you were 5 years ago. just saying.
I would say I'm more cranky. I'm just less passionate.
That might be it.
Less opinionated.
One other kind of interesting thing about the Game Awards before we talk about some of the winners and what we think are like Nintendo was completely absent except for was Anuma even there? Who accepted their award?
Yeah, Anuma accepted the award.
Okay. Well, at least he was there.
Yeah. They won. Nintendo won two awards. They won Best Family Game for Super Mario Wonder, but they didn't have a speech for that one because they skipped a lot of categories. But they had a speech for Anuma winning. Or for Zelda winning best adventure game.
Yeah, it won best Zelda game.
best action adventure game. Which I don't understand why action adventure and action are split up, but whatever. Anyway, a lot of people online were like, as soon as Anuma started taking, doing a speech, a lot of people were like, oh, this means they didn't win Game of the Year because the Game Awards are rigged. And I don't really think that's the case. I do think the Game Awards, they make their nominations and then they have people vote or whatever. What I think the Game Awards really do is they then take that list of winners. So like the Game Awards don't choose the winners. It's all like the journalists around or whatever. And then they try to like make a narrative like through line of those awards. Right. And so The reason why we got a speech for Action Adventure was because they knew Zelda didn't win Game of the Year. It wasn't, oh, Zelda didn't win Game of the Year, let's give them the Action Adventure Award. It was the other way around, I feel like.
Right. Because last year, didn't Game of the Year, whatever it was, win like 3 awards or something?
I don't know.
I swear there were like duplicate award winners last year. All I remember is God of War won Best Soundtrack and I was really upset.
I don't even remember. What was...
Oh, it was Elden Ring.
Oh, yeah, of course. Duh. Speaking of which, Elden Ring was the only reason why I watched the Game Awards this year, and it didn't even show. Rumors were wrong, DLC, and no now sequel, I am nothing. Terrified. How long Elden Ring until we're getting this DLC?
And I mean, kind of continuing on that, no Nintendo, like, we got no Nintendo announcements either.
Yeah, so there was no Metroid. We even talked about, like, a potential Zelda remake being rumored for the Game Awards. That didn't show either. They didn't show the Switch 2, which a lot of people thought that that would be a really good time to like tease a Switch 2.
Nintendo would not tease a Switch 2.
I could see it happening, honestly.
I could see it happening, but like that is so improbable in my head. Like, yeah. Nintendo wants to control the narrative around it.
I mean, I think I even predicted that it was going to be the Switch 2, so I'll take the L there.
Okay. Talk that up. It's not often you take L's.
I take L's. And I'm just kidding. I think that's I'm not afraid to take L's. Like, it's fine. If you are afraid to take L's, you'll never like say anything fun. And that's a boring podcast.
Very true.
I don't know. Honestly, Nintendo doesn't seem to have much of a presence at the Game Awards. They'll show up randomly to do Bayonetta and then Smash Bros. Characters and Zelda and Donkey Kong. Because Donkey Kong also got shown off once.
I had forgotten about that one.
Well, I think the Donkey Kong reveal is a big reason why Nintendo doesn't show up very often. Because that was a very people were not happy with that with that announcement. And what's the name of that one Nintendo podcast with the ex Nintendo employees?
It's not Crit and Kiss, Kit and Krista.
I think it is. Is that?
Oh, is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah. They recently in one of their recent episodes, they talked about that reveal. And they basically just said, "Yeah, we were asked to do something at the Game Awards. We didn't take it like too seriously." And that was also when like Nintendo Directs were starting up. And so there was a lot more competition for what can be shown. And that was just something that we could show because a lot of other stuff was being held up for our own internal presentations. Right. And like Nintendo would be incentivized to have their new Nintendo Directs be good. Right. So that all makes sense. And I think that's kind of just what happened here again. Like Nintendo's like, oh, well, we kind of want to focus on our own show. Whenever that happens, because it needs to be enough to sell a console, and I don't think it's going to be as big as the Switch reveal.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
I think
because you have to consider. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think Metroid Prime 4 is going to have to do a lot of heavy lifting in the reveal. Honestly, at this point,
unless they give us
Mario,
a 3D Mario at the same time.
Yeah, Mario and potentially a Super Smash Bros. Ultimate Deluxe. They could easily just re-release Ultimate with all of, like, the DLC characters in the same game with 11 characters with the big, like, marketing push that we officially have 100 characters. They could call it Smash Bros. 100.
Yeah, they could do that. I mean, what I've been thinking about, like, when it comes to Nintendo revealing their next console, I think it's too late in the year. simply because Nintendo has got all of these bundles right now. Like, they even made a Smash Brothers bundle for this Christmas. They've got their standard Mario Kart bundle. They've got their Smash Brothers bundle. I think they are trying to get as much money out of the Switch as possible this Christmas.
Yeah.
And even if not a lot of eyes are like general consumers, you know, parents of kids that don't watch Game Awards or game announcements, just want to kind of get a Switch because it's what their kids want, whatever. I still think that if they were to announce the Switch 2 before this Christmas season in their last year, sales would decrease. And I imagine Nintendo has done a cost benefit analysis specifically on what would happen if we announce the console before Christmas.
Well, and
the only reason they announced the Switch in September, or at least gave us the teaser for it, is because they had nothing that Christmas season for the Wii U and 3DS.
So yeah.
And they needed to let people know, we've got something coming, don't worry.
Maybe they'll just show something in January. And like that brings me to another like point I constantly bring up about the Game Awards. I hate that it's in December. It's clearly put in December for marketing purposes to get people to buy these games for Christmas and not to actually demonstrate the best games of that year. For example, I don't think Lethal Company even got nominated for best multiplayer, even though that one exploded, and it only exploded like in the last month. Like, there was no way there was enough time.
Well, and think about it. Now all of these winners are putting the banners on their Steam pages or on their websites.
Yeah.
Like, Nintendo released their yearly recap, like, I guess their Spotify Rewind, if you want to call it that, for Nintendo games. And the banner for Tears of the Kingdom, even in that particular thing, had the best action adventure game winner in the corner. I'm like, why did you do this? I've already played the game. Is it so that when I share it on social media, they see the icon?
It's exactly that. I just hate how corporate the Game Awards are. But if that's the only reason or the only way we get them, I guess whatever. I don't know. I don't even like if the Game Awards were to go away, I don't even know if I would shed a tear, though. Speaking of,
we'll have to do. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say like kind of a segue, but. We recently got an announcement that E3 is gone.
Oh, yeah. That was so fun. That was Tuesday, wasn't it?
Yeah. So E3 is gone. We are now completely in the age of Keighley. So the only way we're getting announcements now are through these awful events. I hate Keighley shows, but whatever.
I think it was very cool that the game or E3 opened up the floors to fans. I think that was like a really cool move to like gain clout, but I think it scared devs more than E3 was before, because for the longest time, E3 was just a straight up convention for game developers, for hardware developers, for people in the electronic entertainment industry to show up all together to talk about big things. And for the longest time, like, information from that convention barely made it to consumers, right? Like, there were a lot of behind doors meetings. There were a lot of announcements where they just didn't have actual video footage. Then they started to kind of push things forward. I'd say probably what, like 2009 is where it really started kicking off as, oh, everyone's now interested in what's going on at E3 and watching it. And then several years ago, they made it so that anyone could buy tickets and get in. And that meant they had to expand their floor space dramatically, right? And I think that it kind of scared game developers, specifically because not only do they have to prepare a presentation now, but they also have to have a not super buggy playable demo available for thousands of people to play instead of just a handful of journalists.
I will say, like, I don't think it just shouldn't have opened up to the public. I get where they were coming from. Like, it.
Yeah.
People wanted to go. But 99% of people who interacted with E3 were just streaming it anyway, even when it like was opened up to the public. So I don't think the experiment was really that worth it.
I mean, you probably could have gotten a ticket into E3 if you had a decent enough following. Like, they could have made it so that not just anyone can get in. You have to have like proof that you're a YouTuber or a streamer or something where at least you have an audience. rather than fully opening it up to the public. You know, like locking it down to just game journalists where you have to have a big established website or YouTube channel, whatever. Like, yeah, okay. They could have opened it up a little bit further than that, but I don't know.
I remember there was a lot of growing pains of like YouTubers having a hard time getting in there. And it's like YouTubers were a bit more influential on being influencers than some of these publishers that were getting in. But
yeah,
it's gone now. Now it's the Keeley Awards. I mean, to be fair, Sony was gone. Nintendo was kind of just doing their own direct thing.
Yeah. And all of the big three canceled last year, kind of at the last minute.
Yeah.
So
I think of the big three, Microsoft was one that cared the most about E3. They are the American company of the three.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's value in it. I feel like there's a lot of value in having just kind of like an industry gathering with press at some point in the year. Like we were talking about how that was kind of why Nintendo showcased the Switch 2 at Gamescom, because like E3 was gone and that normally would have been a role filled by E3. You have to like be able to show your hardware to people, and that's an easy way to do it. Nintendo has come out and said that the physical Switch 2 was not at that event. That doesn't mean they didn't have like a PC with like targeted specs towards it, but I just want to make that clarification, because Nintendo did come out and say that the Switch 2 physically was not there, but they were very, very like weaselly in how they were rebooting the rumors there.
It physically wasn't there. Like, okay. We get it. We get it. But you had to show these people anyway. But I just remember like some of the funnest weeks in the summer as like a late high school student and even as an undergrad. We're just checking for announcements on E3, watching live streams from studios or big publishers that I liked. Like, I still really remember the 2015, or I guess it was 16, 2016 E3, where they showed off the entire Great Plateau in Breath of the Wild. And I was just like, I was so hyped the entire time I was watching that show. I remember the 2017 E3, where they showed the announcement for Metroid Prime 4, right? Like, I lost it. I fell out of my chair. I was so excited that the Prime series was getting a new game. Like, there are very distinct moments in my life that I remember from these E3 announcements. And like, yeah, Nintendo Directs are going to be fine. You know, we're a Nintendo podcast after all. We enjoy those. But just there was something about that whole week being everybody's talking about new stuff. Everybody's talking about these different things. You're comparing different studios, and it's just so much more exciting than just thinking about, oh, Nintendo had their announcement last month. I guess we'll listen to Xbox's this month or whatever.
It was a moment where like all gamers kind of just came together at one point through the year. I guess the Game Awards are trying to be that. But man, I don't know. I think a big part of why the Game Awards feel, or a lot of the games felt so like samey or whatever, is because those are just kind of like the games that the Game Awards and Keeley are kind of biased towards, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, there were so many announcements, and like I said, I didn't care for them, but there were a couple that were kind of cool, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I remember like messaging you for one of the biggest announcements, and you were freaking excited.
I will say, as much as I've been like talking bad about the Game Awards showcasing this year, this ironically was probably like the most hype year for the Game Awards ever for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the list that you put down.
They started off real strong with Pony Island 2. I lost my mind. Like, Pony Island, go play it. It's kind of like an existential horror puzzle game. Absolutely phenomenal. It was followed up by Inscription, which is one of the best card games ever made. I guess
also, the Hex was also for context there. For our listeners, card games are like your favorite genre ever.
Yeah. Like, well, and like, oh man, it's hard to explain Dan Mullen games. Just go play them. Like, I highly, highly recommend the first Pony Island at the very least. It's like a couple dollars on Steam every year. You could pick it up for like $1 or $2. I don't know. That's always on sale. And it's only like an hour long game, but I am over the moon for Pony Island 2. And we kind of got a release date of 2025, but it also flickered to 2026. So that's Dan Mullen just playing with us. Like, it's probably 2026. World of Goo got a sequel. That's a surprise.
That is a surprise.
It's probably 10 years too late, but you know what? I'll take it. It was very, that was a shock. Sega had a weird trailer where they showed like five games or whatever, and it wasn't clear if they were like remakes or new games or whatever. Turns out they're new games. They're just bringing back like five properties all at once for some reason.
Right. Returning to these kind of forgotten series.
Yeah. Players. One of them being Jet Set Radio. So I'm losing my mind at that. Like,
yeah.
So like right off the bat, we got like three kind of like Magic Christmas Land reveals for me, like out of nowhere. I was not expecting, none of these got leaked. There was no like warning for any of this. Black Myth Wukong looks really good. It's a shame that the developers kind of suck, but I don't know. It's I'm in disbelief that it's even coming out, because it just looks absolutely incredible. And then I lost my mind at the final showcasing. I even told my friend, like, there was no possible way they're showing Monster Hunter. there's just no way, because like I was pretty dead set on the idea that 2024 we are not getting Monster Hunter, because Capcom is releasing Dragon's Dogma, and the two series are mildly similar enough to the point where I don't see them releasing in the same year, especially since Monster Hunter would absolutely destroy Dragon's Dogma's sales. It would just kind of cannibalize on it. But they announced it, and I was kind of correct in that it's not coming out in 2024. It's coming out in 2025. They're just announcing it way earlier than like a normal Monster Hunter gets announced. And this one looks like the open world Monster Hunter that people have been kind of like fantasizing with. It's got the glide mechanics of Zelda. So that's how you know. And then it says Wilds. It's clearly chasing trends, but you know what? I'll take these trends.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really cool. That was one trailer I actually really did watch, and I was like, oh yeah, that's nice. Maybe I'll get into Monster Hunter. Like I say every time a Monster Hunter game comes out. And then I was like, I bet Jordan is losing his mind.
Yeah.
And you were.
Oh yeah. I've watched that trailer probably 100 times at this point. It's not the best Monster Hunter trailer. Monster Hunter World had the best Monster Hunter trailer or reveal trailer, but I'm over the moon. I'm just hoping that they bring back wire bugs from Monster Hunter Rise, because I feel like that's my favorite mechanic ever introduced to the Monster Hunter series. But if you know, then you know that Monster Hunter is, as a series, is developed by two different teams. And this is the World team, not the Rise team. The Rise team has in the past typically focused on like the portable devices, while the World team has particularly focused on the console releases. So maybe they'll adopt some of the ideas of Rise, but I'm going to edge on the bet that they aren't. We've already seen the Clutch Claw, which probably means no wire bugs, which is sad.
Yeah, sounds sad. But hey, maybe it'll come out on Switch 2 and it'll be good. Or you'll get it on your upgraded Steam Deck when you decide to buy one of those instead of Switch 2.
I'm getting on Steam. I'd have no hope of it coming out on Switch 2. I just don't expect the Switch to be targeting the specs required for this. As much as I love Monster Hunter, typically they are not good at optimizing games.
What are you talking about?
Rise was actually Black Magic. Maybe I need to like take that statement back, because maybe the RE engine was just made with like the Philosopher's Stone or something, because it was, that engine has been absolutely insane. So maybe through the magic of the RE engine, it will come to Switch 2. I won't hold out any hope for it though.
I mean, if I buy it, it's going to be on Steam. Yeah. So,
I mean, that's where the mods are. And
yeah. And I actually have a really decent GPU and CPU in my computer. So, and I have a gaming laptop. Yeah. I need to play more games on my laptop. But anyway, I mean, for me, one of the big things that stuck out beyond some of these ones, which I do recall, like, I really like seeing more Final Fantasy VII stuff. Like, I got hooked on the Final Fantasy VII remake, and I need to learn what all of the different names are for Final Fantasy VII, because they now use that kind of as its own series name now. It's not like it's just Final Fantasy number seven. It's Final Fantasy VII colon whatever game or story is being told. So
I don't understand Final Fantasy's naming convention. Like,
why didn't they just like rename it away from Final Fantasy VII? Like, I branding, of course, but they could have just been like Cloud's games and then
yeah. another as games. An outsider, Final Fantasy, like whenever people start talking about Final Fantasy, it makes my eyes glaze over, because like I have no idea what these name conventions mean.
what's happening here? It's like Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, that's another one that makes no sense.
I mean, same company.
Man, I am just not a JRPG guy.
No, you're not. I mean, at least it's not like Kingdom Hearts Union Cross or whatever, where really important games were released on mobile that are no longer available or whatever. But I don't know. I like Final Fantasy VII. I thought the remake was really good, and I'm excited to see the next piece of it, though I will have to get a PlayStation 5, I guess, if I want to play that anytime soon. But
I thought you had a PlayStation 5 for some reason.
No, I don't. I only have a 4.
Yeah, I like PlayStation 5. It is a good Bloodborne machine. Yes, I can play Bloodborne on PS4.
I mean, if I get a PS5, it's going to be like my Spider-Man machine, I guess.
Yeah. Did you play Spider-Man 2? Oh, wait, no, it's on.
It's on PS5. That's a dumb
question to ask. Yeah, sorry.
I want to play it. Because what's so funny is how the fans are raging that it didn't win Game of the Year.
Yeah.
And Baldur's Gate won. Like, you do realize that Game of the Year goes to, like, really innovative and captivating games. And Spider-Man 2 looks awesome, and I want to play it, but Baldur's Gate 3 just has more to it.
I was going to say, I don't feel like anyone was like questioning that. Like, everyone was just going like, yeah, it's just going to be Baldur's Gate 3.
Well, you haven't seen all of the like TikToks and YouTube videos of the big Spider-Man 2 fans just like losing their minds over the fact that it wasn't Game of the Year.
Yeah. And here I was thinking, like, why is Spider-Man and Mario on?
I was like, why is Mario here? Like, Spider-Man, sure, whatever. It's a highly anticipated game. Yeah. Looks pretty, whatever. But yeah, I was like, Mario for Game of the Year? It wasn't so good that I have been hooked on it. I'm still like only on World 5 or something.
Oh, I mean, I 100% in Worlds or Wonder. So,
well, that's
as someone who 100% in Wonder, game's pretty good. I liked it. I don't know why it's on Game of the Year.
But hey, it won Best Family Game.
Yeah.
Because it has multiplayer.
And
it won the Nintendo Award.
And Pikmin destroyed Fire Emblem's hopes and dreams for best strategy game.
Yep.
Which is well deserved.
We need to do our own Game of the Year awards and have our own little categories just for Nintendo games.
Well, we typically do that every year.
We do our year in review.
We probably did it in December 1 year, so I probably shouldn't say that. But by principle, I feel like we should do it in January when the year's over.
We can plan on that. That's fine.
I'm not going to say that we've never done it. I could probably be proven wrong. We might have done it in December in the previous year. But
well, so here's the question then. Should our next December episode, because I think we might have one more on us before Christmas, should that be our what are we hoping for from 2024? Or I guess we have other things we could potentially talk about. I don't know. We can hash out those details.
We can even talk about Metroid. Have you heard of the rumors?
No. I'm excited.
The rumor is that Metroid Prime 4 is done and Nintendo is just kind of sitting on it.
What?
And has been done since the summer.
Okay, it's definitely the Switch 2 launch game.
Apparently they are reworking the cutscenes or whatever. I don't know how much stock there is in the rumor. It's been making the buzz online. But that is what's going around. And on top of that, like, we've seen more job postings from Retro Studios. They recently hired a network engineer specifically for Metroid Prime 4. So multiplayer is probably coming.
Sweet. If it's anything like Metroid Prime 2's multiplayer, I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be fun. I don't expect it to be like a big driving force of the game, but it'll...
I get that. But
it seems like Metroid Prime 4 is coming to a close on its development, which is exciting because that's kind of the only game we know about from Nintendo coming out still.
Well, besides like my
Luigi's Mansion remake and
the Peach game.
And the Peach game, yeah.
Which every time I go and get something at GameStop, I mean, this has only been like 3 times because I picked up a Mario RPG and WarioWare, and both times they're like, do you want to put down money for the Peach game? And I'm like, no.
You know, it's a good thing I'm not in charge of Nintendo because I would have trolled all the fans by having, I would have had a Game Awards announcement. It would have been for the Peach game, and she would be in a Cranky Kong outfit for one of her outfits.
She just has a really long beard and a cane that's rocking in a chair.
Just trolling, referencing the last time they did a Game Awards announcement.
Oh, that would have been perfect. Oh, man. Oh, that would have been good. Huh. But anyway, I guess to kind of wrap things up a little bit, we should go through and remind people who actually won some of the big awards. You know, we already talked about Baldur's Gate winning Game of the Year. That was honestly no surprise.
Not surprised. Really didn't think it's not Zelda my game of the year. I think Baldur's Gate is fine. I don't know why everyone's freaking out about it. It's like Divinity 2, but a bit more polished.
I have it downloaded. I need to play it. I know my sister has been completely enthralled by it.
I'm also just not.
So much so that she's playing it through my Steam family share. So
I'm also
I
just
feel bad if I kick her off.
RPG guy, so I'm just not the target audience for this, I guess.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, then we had ongoing game going to Cyberpunk 2077, which it's crazy to me that that can still win awards.
Yeah.
Didn't that game come out like 3 years ago?
Yeah, 2020. It's why is on gaming going game even award? There's a bunch of these awards, like people talk about how we need like people to do speeches. Do we really need Cyberpunk 2077 to do a speech about how they still exist?
No.
Like some of these absolutely should be rapid fire, like skipped along.
Yeah, like what is the Player's Voice Award? Yeah. Like is that
well, and like so many of these were won by Baldur's Gate. Like you really only need the studio to do one speech, right?
right.
Just make it so the speeches are longer. Give them 5 minutes, not 30 seconds.
Yeah, because then Baldur's Gate 3 won multiplayer game.
Yeah, which
okay.
honestly, I think that award should not go to Baldur's Gate. I think multiplayer on Baldur's Gate is an unfun way to play Baldur's Gate. I started playing multiplayer with friends, and my friend immediately ran and like exhausted all the dialogue, and I had no idea what was going on in the story. Maybe I just need new friends.
Maybe. Because Baldur's Gate also won best role-playing game, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's the RPG. I personally wanted Liza P to win there, but Liza P, why was it in best RPG? It should have been in like action. Well, I guess it was in action, but Liza P got snubbed, man. That's my game of the year, and it didn't win anything.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Because then Alan Wake 2 won narrative. Cool. Haven't played it. Don't even really know what it's about. And then kind of the dumbest award, in my opinion, is most anticipated game and it going to Final Fantasy VII. It's like, I think there would be other anticipated games if they were like pre-announced that would win over some of these. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I just it's a dumb award. Give it the Silk Song.
Yeah, everyone's been waiting for Silk Song forever.
Yeah.
It's still not out.
It's whatever. It's whatever.
Yep. And then Sea of Stars won Indie Game. The Independent Game Award it's a good award to have. The Best Studio and Game Direction went to Remedy Entertainment for Alan Wake 2. Cool. Again, I didn't play that. We already talked about the family game being Mario Wonder, which awesome. That's the Nintendo award. Nintendo's won that category like almost every year.
Yeah, it's the Nintendo award.
Yeah. And then Alan Wake won Best Art Direction. And then Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon, won Best Action Game.
Woo!
And then Zelda won Best Action Adventure, which at least Tears of the Kingdom won something.
Yeah.
I still think Tears of the Kingdom is an amazing game. Like, I'd probably rate it a 9.5 out of 10 to a 10. I got really burnt out on how many things you have to do for 100%. But I don't think that it could have ever matched Breath of the Wild, especially since Breath of the Wild came out.
So I feel like it deserved to get nominated, but I also feel like it didn't deserve to win Game of the Year.
Yeah, it just, I can agree with that.
It wasn't innovative enough. It was an oddly uncharacteristic thing for Zelda. It's just, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about Zelda. A big reason why I haven't finished it yet is because I have really mixed emotions around Tears of the Kingdom. Like, I recognize it's a phenomenal game. It's a 10 out of 10, but it's like a 10 out of 10 that just doesn't excite me.
Yeah, that there's just something missing.
Yeah,
so.
It's missing the magic. It's like...
And I would put that magic that it's missing on the fact that it is a reused Hyrule.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%.
Like, that is exactly where maybe, it is maybe for we me. Should it's just, like, I've been here.
Maybe next episode we'll just talk about Tears of the Kingdom. We'll finally sit down and have our episode.
Oh, finally.
We've been avoiding
You're telling it. Me after 7 months, you and I can finally talk about Tears of the Kingdom.
I have not finished
again.
It yet, but I don't know if I'm going to, is the thing.
At least give it a try. Like, I don't know, do another dungeon or two.
Yeah.
Because what I really want you to do is I want you to experience the final part of the game. Because honestly, the finale of the game is probably the best in all of Zelda.
Okay.
And
so maybe
I think you'll finish
it
like that.
I just
start playing tonight.
So the thing is, I feel kind of disappointed with Tears of the Kingdom. And dare I say, I kind of feel bored and feel like I'm forcing myself to play it. And it hurts to say all that because I can recognize objectively it's a good game, but it's not, there's no magic to it for me.
Yeah, I can agree with that, especially after clearing the main story, because that's what I focused on first. Trying to 100% things, like get all of the shrines and get all of the deep roots and stuff, like that felt like a grind for me. But I feel like that is a discussion we should have next week when you play more of it.
Yeah, I do want to say, like, before, I guess I have to just go force myself to play through it this weekend. But like, I think a big part of it is I'm a long-term Zelda fan, right? I've been a Zelda fan since my first game was A Link to the Past on the SNES. And like, the big three pillars for Zelda for me were a sense of adventure, dungeons, and items. And Breath of the Wild took away dungeons and items, right? But they maximized the sense of adventure. So it was fine. It was good. It was great. It heavily leaned on one of the three pillars, and I still was able to enjoy it. Tears of the Kingdom has taken away that sense of adventure. And now there is no, like, main three pillars of Zelda, which I feel like is why I kind of lost interest in Tears of the Kingdom. The magic's just not there for me because, like, the three pillars are gone.
Yeah, I can agree with you a lot on that, especially since I love the dungeons. That was my favorite part of Zelda, like, every single time. The things that I look forward to the most when I play through Ocarina of Time are going through my favorite dungeons. I mean, we've done an episode of the podcast talking about our favorite dungeons and how much they mean to us. Like, Ocarina of Time highlights that I will always remember are, like, inside the Forest Temple or inside the Spirit Temple, or, yeah, you know, like, those are the key moments for me where going through those puzzles and figuring things out. And Tears of the Kingdom tried to bring a lot of that back with the temples, but they don't hit the same way. They're just... go press five big switches that are that look different. Yeah. That's the whole dungeon.
They're lifeless. They have no heart to them.
And I hate the water temple so much.
Yeah. The temples kind of give me the same feeling of Starfield in this game. Like, yeah. They're clearly, I don't know.
Well, I think maybe I'll play through parts of it again this weekend too.
I'll force myself to just blitz through the second half of the game. But I don't think it's my game of year, game of the year, but I still think it's like a 10 out of 10. It's such a weird feeling because it's never been
a scenario where
I felt like a 10 out of 10 game. I don't know. I just don't feel emotionally invested in Tears of the Kingdom.
I like a lot of the story bits. I cried during some of it, but going through it again, I don't know. Maybe it's a Zelda game that I would just enjoy more playing through the story and not trying to focus on clearing too many objectives.
Yeah. A big reason why I stopped was because there was a moment where I said, I had more fun with Breath of the Wild than Tears of the Kingdom. Because there was a moment where you enter this like building where it's just like filled with guardians, right? And it was like just like this really hype moment. And there hasn't really been a big hype moment like that in Tears of the Kingdom. And I just know where like everything is already. I know where to find the Zoras. It's basically the same city again. It's just with a slight difference to it. There's no exploration, sense of adventure. I don't know. It focused a bit too much on the gaminess.
Yeah. And then all they really gave us were the depths and the sky islands, but all of the promotional material made it seem like there were a lot more sky islands than there actually ended up being. And the depths are really cool, but they're super repetitive and there's not a lot down there once you actually start exploring it.
Yeah.
So, but I'll play through some more of it. You know, I don't want to necessarily just say, oh, it's a terrible game. You know, I'm sure we'll praise it on our next episode, at least in some ways.
Oh, yeah, the game's great. I dumped 100 hours into it. But.
Yeah, I dumped 110 into it. Like, it's good. I enjoyed it. But I agree with you that I don't think it deserved Game of the Year. And I'm glad that it won Action Adventure because at least it got something.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, there's things it did that are technical marvels, right? Like the fusing mechanics are really well done.
Especially running on the jank piece of hardware that is the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
And the recall mechanic is still amazing. Like they keep track of like every actor's history for the last X seconds or whatever. It's nuts.
I just hope that what we learned from this experiment is every Zelda needs a new map.
Yes. Oh, please. You know, and some people are probably like, you know, I thought that maybe Twilight Princess from Ocarina of Time should have been on a very similar map. And it's like, yeah, but it wasn't, and it was better for it. Like, I'm grateful that Ocarina of Time, its map wasn't just pasted into Twilight Princess.
Oh, yeah.
Sure, it's messed up a bunch of like Zelda theorists' interpretations of history and lore because they're like, why is Death Mountain in a completely different place in this game compared to Hyrule Castle Town and the Lake Hylia? It's like,
yeah,
there's weird inconsistencies, but
you know,
I'd rather have a new map.
This game has taught me that I don't want the world of Hyrule to be consistent. I want them to design the game to how it should be like geared for that game and feel new.
Yeah.
You know,
take me back to new Hyrule and let there be train tracks everywhere.
Yeah. Let's just take a break from Hyrule.
Let's go back to Termina.
Yeah.
Termina open world would be awesome. But anyway, we're now just kind of going off on Zelda speculation that I'm sure we'll do again next week. So anyway, congratulations to Baldur's Gate. Well done, Nintendo, for winning your award. And by your award, I mean the family award and also Action Adventure with Zelda. I do agree that the Game Awards is too corporate, even if they had good announcements this year. But, you know, well, is there anything else you want to talk about or have anything else to say, Jordan?
I think I'm good.
OK, well, thank you for listening to our rant / discussion / I don't know. There were some moments of praise, I guess, for some things we talked about today. But more than anything, it was kind of a catch up episode for us to talk about things we've been thinking about for the last couple of months. If you enjoyed the episode, please be sure to leave a like or a comment or a review, depending on the platform that you're on. Doing so will help the show out immensely and help others find it as well. Feel free to join our Discord server by going to nintendofusion.com/discord. You can chat with us there about all things Nintendo. But with all that said, we just want to say thanks again for listening to the Nintendo Fusion podcast, and we'll catch you on the next one. Bye-bye.
See ya.